Welcome, my friends, to the Generations Radio broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson, your host, but more importantly, a father of five, broadcasting from the Eastern Plains here of Colorado and trying to reconfigure the way that we educate our children in the 21st century, pretty much throwing off everything we've learned from the State Department of Education and the National Department of Education since the beginning of the 20th century. Folks, they've been standardizing and centralizing ever since they began to centralize controls in local school districts, and we've rejected that idea because our children are not widgets. Okay, our children are not processed through the centralized systems configured by Bill Bennett and the National Department of Education. Not going to happen for our kids. Every single one of our children are different. The first thing you say when your second child shows up, he pops out of the womb, you say, wow, they're so different. And after that, of course, you don't bother saying it again because it's the most obvious thing that you could ever say. Every child created differently by God and therefore must be educated differently. It's not a one-size-fits-all approach to education, folks. Some children are 100 times more difficult than others in terms of their emotions, or in terms of their spiritual condition, or in terms of their physical condition, or in terms of their mental conditions. Yes, some children radically different. Not like 27% different. I'm talking 10 times different, 100 times, orders of magnitude different than other children. And therefore, they may require a little more work at points. And that's okay. But folks, when it comes to education, we don't configure something that's a sort of a paint-by-numbers kit where you go to a conference and you figure out exactly what you need for your child because that's what people are doing with their children. No, it's a sculpturing. And sculpturing is something that requires faith. You got to add a little this, a little that, and every sculpture is different. And, of course, you need faith and wisdom. Wisdom from God himself if you're going to attempt this. And, ladies and gentlemen, of course, it's easier to dump them into a process system where professionals act like they know what they're doing. But, folks, that's not the solution. The solution is parents guided by the wisdom of God and, hopefully, useful tools provided by many folks out there, including Diane Kraft from Child Diagnostics, and she's got some great ideas for children with special needs. Of course, every child has special needs because every child is unique and different. So you may require a little this for this child, a little that for that child, a little this, a little that, but you got to sculpture that child as best as you can according to the wisdom that God gives you as a parent. In just a moment, Diane Kraft is going to join me again on the Generations Radio broadcast. Some great wisdom from this lady in just one sec. You stay tuned.
Folks, with this radio program, we're bringing relationships and truth back to a lost and lonely world. That's why we advocate homeschooling, mentorship, family-based economics, and a biblical worldview, all as part of our homeschool ministry based in Colorado. For homeschooling seminars, curriculum, and encouragement, visit our website at chec.org. That's check.org on the web. For apprenticeship, mentorship, and entrepreneurship training for your children and your family, you need to hook up with our AME program at ameprogram.com. That's ameprogram.com. You know, the Generations Radio program is a ministry of generations with vision, where we work hard to cast a vision for the next generation through each and every radio broadcast. Tune in online at generationsradio.org for the daily show, the blog, and the online store. That's generationsradio.org.
Back on the Generations Radio broadcast, this is Kevin Swanson, and something you'll discover when you have your second child is that every child is unique and different. Some children are much more difficult than others in terms of their learning, sometimes mentally, sometimes spiritually, sometimes emotionally, sometimes physically. It's amazing. These children are complex creatures and all very different. And to talk about the struggling learner today is Diane Kraft. She's from Child Diagnostics. She's been helping literally tens of thousands of parents with struggling learners for about 30 years. Diane, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
It's good to have you with us. Now, you'll be in Florida in May, Virginia in June, back in Colorado at the CHEC conference in June, and you're talking to literally tens of thousands of parents about this issue. They have children, and many of them have struggling learners.
That's right, Kevin. In fact, as I travel the country, we're going to be in Ohio and Arizona right after that. As I've been traveling the country for the last 10 years doing conventions, and as I've been working with HSLDA as one of their learning specialists, what we've discovered is the fastest growing population in homeschooling is our families who have wonderful kids who are very bright, hardworking, but they have to work harder than we want them to have to work at some aspect of learning. Sometimes it's in reading. Sometimes we have, like, our kids gifted with a glitch. They have all these wonderful stories in their head, but they're allergic to a pencil. Maybe we can talk about that a little bit today, about kids who are allergic to their pencil. And the parents are just so frightened because they say, they dictate these wonderful stories to me, and yet when I ask them to write something, it's so little. So we're doing so well dictating. But am I going to have to follow them to college?
Right.
I always say, well, you know what? They're starting to get mom dorm rooms right next door. In other words, no, there's a lot we can do, but first we need to identify it. So a lot of the kids are having to work harder than we want them to, and we call that a glitch, but it's unidentified sometimes. In reading, is it in writing? Is it in spelling? Many times we say, oh, but spelling isn't important. We can use spell check. But you and I know you have to be pretty close for spell check to work. Or sometimes parents will say, yes, but my husband was a poor speller. So, but when we compare, for example, I had a family yesterday from Florida. I do my consultation practice here. I've done it for 13 years. And she said the same thing. It's this wonderful young man with great ideas. However, his spelling was so premature or immature from where he was 11 years old, so bright. She said, well, her husband was a poor speller, but not just in the same degree. So there's all sorts of degrees.
So let's start with the basics here, Diane. First of all, we've got to make sure that they can see. I mean, you mentioned the whole issue of the visual. It's important that our children be able to see before they sit down and try to read and write. And that's a big one.
Yes, that's right. So there are just some real wonderful checklists they can do. If parents are interested, they can just go to hslda.org and then click on the left column, Struggling Learner. Or they can go to hslda.org/struggling learner. And what we have on there are checklists, so that it doesn't have to be, there's no mystery to learning. There are four learning gates. If all the four learning gates are wide open, then learning happens without even thinking about it. And you know, you have some of those at home, Kevin, that your wife or you just kind of, we just throw words around them. In other words, you read with them, you can pick up any reading program, and the words are in the air and they just get it. And so, you know, those types, that means all four learning gates are wide open. If one of them is locked, to varying degrees, but then they have to work harder. Well, on that website, we've created a checklist so the family can find out which of the four learning gates, and the first one that you talked about is there. So we have the visual learning gate. Now, these aren't learning styles, not how a child learns. That is totally different. These are the way we process information. We process information through learning gates in our brain. And if one of them or two of them are blocked, then we have to work harder. So we have to work a little hard or majorly hard. So visual or auditory, or sometimes we call the third one the writing gate, which really is visual, spatial, visual motor. And the last one is focusing. Dr. Mel Levine, in his One Mind at a Time, calls them energy leaks. I've always referred to them as locked learning gates, but I like what Dr. Mel Levine says, energy leaks. So if these children had on their back of their shirt a battery strip, it would be so helpful. So that we would know, is this child really using more battery energy for this process? Or is this child just being, is it a discipline problem, a character issue, that we need to schedule differently? What's going on? And so we're going to see it. In other words, does the child have to use more energy to stay focused than we want them to? Do you have to sit with them all the time? Or the first question that you just asked, to get back to your introductory statement about this, even checking the eyes. So number one, we want to see, has that visual processing, which is tracking the eyes left to right, is that intact, and how to check that? For example, in our country, we read from left to right, but if we were in Israel, we'd read right to left. Our Japan, up, top down, so our brain isn't wired for that. So at first, when we read with them, you know how you track with the finger left to right, and the brain says, oh, I see, in this country, we read left to right. Then by the, we say middle of first grade, which would be sort of 6 months after at home, in homeschool, we introduce reading. That's supposed to transfer to the right brain, so it's automatic. Right brain is where, when we learn how to drive, well, first we concentrate, then it transfers over, so it's automatic. If it isn't, and they're having to work harder at it, even with the young boy I saw yesterday, he was reading but didn't like to read because he had to work so hard with, he was even saying whole words backwards, or like on is no, or was is saw. Or for him, he even read what, he could read the word affectionate, but he wanted to do, he started with A, at, you see how the S turned around and became a T?
Right, he saw the T, right.
So, yeah, so then we have in that checklist, if you suspect that, if your child has two or three of these characteristics, then, you know, go to a developmental optometrist and do a vision screening.
Yeah.
And check those kinds of things.
Sure.
You have about three or four areas they could check. Sometimes for these kids, just the color transparency makes a really big difference because they have a little ectopic sensitivity syndrome. In other words, the white of the background of the paper is reflecting and causing them to have to strain too much.
Yeah.
And so when we do that, we do two things. We do eye exercises to get the convergence better, and that works so well. Or we add essential fatty acids because the retina of the eye is made of cones and rods.
Yeah.
This is so cute. Cones are for acuity, as you know, and rods are for light and dark adaptation. In the animal kingdom, pigeons only have cones so they can see the prey.
Mm-hmm.
And owls only have rods. Well, we have both.
Mm-hmm.
But the rods are filled with membranes. Membranes are filled with a fluid, like transmission fluid. And the transmission fluid is BHA, the docosahexaenoic acid we get in two places, mother's milk and fish oil.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as you talk about this, Diane, I can't help but thinking how God has created a human being, very complex, but very integrated. We have the mind connected with the body, connected with the soul. The character is important, obviously, but also, the diet is important for the functioning of the mind. And why don't we get back into the issue of diet? You talked about fatty acids. Why are fatty acids so important for processing and mental exercises?
Oh, that's such a great question. Sometimes I teach a talk at a workshop at conferences, and it's called, Is it Character or Chemistry?
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel so much, I'm so, you know, so strong into, of course, the Word of God as you are in character through the Word. And sometimes when parents say, yes, but I'm disciplining him all the time. In other words, all your regular things that are working for everybody else in the family aren't working for this wonderful young child. So then we look at another thing, and that's the chemistry, and that's that serotonin that you were talking about and we were looking at. So that is so important. What we know is, and even when we talk about why boys tend to mature a little bit later, we know that both sides of the brain are connected by a bundle of nerves called the corpus callosum. Corpus callosum connects the two hemispheres. Anything we do with both hemispheres is much easier than we kind of shut a hemisphere off, just like we do shut an eye off. Well, that midline is made of fat when we look at the brain in color. And in fact, the brain is 60% fat. We used to think it was all in our hips. So we're really fat heads walking around.
Right.
The fatter our heads, the better we are. But the kind of fat the brain is made of is DHA, again, docosahexaenoic acid. We get in two places, mother's milk and in fish oil. And the wonderful information that we've gotten about that, even in Dr. Jacqueline Storti's studies, she's done double-blind, placebo-controlled studies, where she talks about that ADD, ADHD, which we don't need those terms. We just know, you know, if kids are wiggling so much, it's impossible for them to learn, not just wiggling that we can accommodate at home, which we can, which is wonderful. So ADHD, dyslexia, and dyspraxia, which the word for dyspraxia is a clumsy child syndrome. Sometimes it is also fine motor issues. That, because dyspraxia is under that. Those three run in families, she found, who have a shortage in the essential fatty acids. And she did double-blind, placebo-controlled studies, testing kids using protocol amounts, which is fairly high amounts, of fish oil.
Mm-hmm.
And after 3 months, they were checked for reading, for dyslexia, for balance and writing, for dysgraphia and dyspraxia, and for the ability to keep their nervous system under control, which is really what they call ADD or ADHD, when their nervous system is just too unhappy. And so after she gave a high dose of fish oils, and it was statistically so significant in the changes that they wrote it up in all the medical journals. So the doctors do know about this, but a lot of times, you know, we don't have a lot of time in our doctor visits, so they don't let us know. Well, what do we know about that? We know that essential fatty acids coat, you know, the myelin sheath. They coat the nervous system. They are the main component of the corpus callosum, connecting both hemispheres, so they affect learning. We know the retina of the eye is affected. In fact, I went to my vision doctor just the other day, and she had DHA right there. She said if she can get her adults to get fish oils, their vision gets so much better.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to be high amounts. So in there, we talk about 500 milligrams of just DHA is the protocol amount. If parents, since we only have a little time on the broadcast, if they want to know more about this, they can just go to DianeCraft.org and download all the handouts I have for the talks I do across the country, where I give all the little protocol amounts in there, and Dr. Jacqueline Storti's book, so they can look all of those kinds of things up. But the serotonin is what helps us to be able to stay focused.
Diane, what about processed sugars? I know you're a little bit down on that. What happens if a child is on processed sugars a little too much?
Well, and you know, that's such a common thing, is that we all know, a common knowledge, is that in general kids don't do well with sugar. However, we like sugar. We don't need to banish it. But what we want to look at is how come some kids, just absolutely what the parents will say, and it's literally true, bounce off the wall with sugar, and others can handle it. Haven't you seen that even in your own family?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. In fact, my little boy at 3 or 4 years old was at a church fellowship time, and he turned to somebody and said, "I can't eat that sugar cookie. It just makes me hyper."
They know that. It's so cute. Well, why is that? Well, there's a chemical reason for that. Generally, we have found that the children who are sugar reactors are the kids who had more exposure to antibiotics when they were in babies, 0 to 3, or even in utero exposure. When that happens, they tend to get that yeast fungus overgrowth in their gut, and what happens is that craves sugar. And so it puts off a toxin called acetaldehyde, and that makes them wiggly and hyper and spacey, and sometimes can make really huge changes. You know, we all know Roger Staubach is such a famous quarterback. His wife was in and out of mental hospitals for 20 years with intractable depression that they couldn't get a hold of. And she even had electroconvulsive therapy until they found she really had a yeast fungus overgrowth from a lot of antibiotics, which, of course, antibiotics are life-saving. We're certainly not against anything. It's just a fallout. And when he treated her for that, which is just stuff you can do at the health food store, her depression went away, her 20-year depression.
Wow.
So sometimes it causes a depression. Sometimes it causes wiggly behavior. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it causes whiny kids. Sometimes it causes them to be real spacey. Other times they just know that they feel real jiggly inside.
Mm-hmm.
So what we try to do is look at the diet, like particularly breakfast, probably the biggest offender are cereals. And they're so convenient. That's such a shame that most of them aren't very healthy.
Diana, shift the conversation slightly. You mentioned dyslexia. You mentioned some of the troubles with boys and their learning issues. There have been a number of books published warning us about processing boys through the academic rigmarole too early in their lives. Is that something? What position do you take on that? Do you think that some boys could be started later? Do you think that there are some learning disabilities that should be dealt with before we start exercising the typical academic rigmarole? Where do you land on that?
Well, I assure him with the research that shows, and we've just seen it. You know, I homeschooled my son. Mm-hmm. When I was finished homeschooling him, I went back into teaching, so I had all those years with students too. And what we have seen is that absolutely boys, we know, and the research is so clear, do tend to mature later. Interesting study out of UCLA School of Medicine. You know how we talked about that corpus callosum being made of fat?
Yeah.
And that helps both hemispheres, so we can go from short-term to long-term memory. Well, they found that boys, UCLA School of Medicine found boys have a 3 times higher need for this essential fatty acid than girls. And we determined that in utero, when girls are determined to be girls, estrogen is fired, which is a fatty carrier because it makes eggs. But testosterone is not a fatty carrier. So one of the things that Dr. Jacqueline Storti found in her research, that nebulous area of immaturity is really can be enhanced by essential fatty acids being given early. And so that isn't the whole piece, but that's one of the pieces to that chemical makeup. But all the way through, even in California, when their early studies, they found that boys really are pretty much ready to learn to read and learn to do math when they're 7 and 8. And girls, you know, sometimes at 5 years old, they're trying to...
But if you're dealing with a young boy who has real struggles, is it important to go at his pace, deal with some of the issues, and eventually he may be well ahead of the rest of the class, but you just treat him as an individual and work him through his problems, and eventually, have you seen real success in these things over the years?
You know, this is one of the biggest puzzles for parents, exactly what you brought up, Kevin,
is
how to identify, is this a child who is just going to grow out of this?
Yeah.
Do I just wait? Or is this a real deal and I need to seek some early intervention? So, and that's the biggest thing, and one of the talks we do is identifying and correcting block learning gates, and mainly identifying, is this child really, and I'll just show you some of the markers. When people come to see me, some of the markers we show them. And number one, is it a maturity issue? In other words, what they want to know is, does this child just need a little more time? Well, these are some of the markers we say. First of all, does this child have a desire to learn? So, for example, if a child wants to learn to read really, really badly, loves to listen to stories, wants to learn, and can't, then that means there's a block we want to look into. But let's say he doesn't even care a bit. He just wants to be running around, playing, you know, 7.5 years old. He's all, you know, wanting to run and play on the fort, like Andrew Pudawa says, so, you know, kids who like to play in forts, the boys, well, then let's give his nervous system another 6 months to mature, and then let's try it again. But I intervene. I will immature his nervous system by just getting some good old flavored cod liver oil, or just have fish more often. Or number two, do they like to listen to stories?
Mm-hmm.
There's a boy who loves to listen to stories.
Yeah.
Let's say he's 7.5, will listen forever, but the reading process is hard.
Yeah.
Then there is a block that something's going on. But again, if sitting there to listen to read, hear a story is too much for his nervous system, then we need to give him another 6 months.
Yeah.
But I do it only in 6 month increments because, you know, we go by better late than early from Dr. Raymond and Dorothy Moore, and they wrote a wonderful book. In fact, it's because of them that I homeschooled in the first place. I love them.
Sure.
But that was in response to the early interventions. What was it? Head Start.
Uh-huh.
And but in homeschool, we've taken it a little bit further and said, let's just let them go on until they learn and on their own pace.
Yeah, exactly. Diane, how important is it to establish a stable home, a learning environment within the home that is stable, that has a sense of love and stability? You know, I run into homes from time to time where things seem to be really falling apart. The parents somewhat abusive, they're angry, they're not really affectionate with the children, and their children have all kinds of learning difficulties. How important, especially right now, as you know, we're in an age where the family seems to be falling apart. There's less stability today than there was 40 years ago. How important is it for families to really establish that stable learning environment?
Boy, that's such a great question. And that goes into scheduling.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say the number one thing for stable home life, and you know this too, is that the parents love each other and show love for each other.
Mm-hmm.
And the number one and most important thing is that they schedule parent time alone.
Mm-hmm.
A date night or whatever you call it or anything or even just before all everybody goes to sleep, you have that half hour. If you don't have time alone with your spouse, then the base is gone.
Yes.
And that's where the love needs to be. And the children get their stability. Their nervous system settles down.
Mm-hmm.
When everything, even if there's not a great schedule, even if it's chaotic in the homeschool day, which often it is when you have new babies and such, but if they see mom and dad treat each other with respect and take time alone, say, no, honey, you need to stay in your bed. You need to do this. This is mommy and daddy's time. Oh, they have a stable base.
Yeah. What about media, television, computer games? What's your thought on that?
Well, we know that overstimulates their nervous system.
Okay.
They're just not ready developmentally for that.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, oh, no, they love it. Oh, sure they do. But they are just in a constant state of buzz inside. And the longer they play them, not that we're against them at all, everything in moderation. Mm-hmm. However, it may look on the outside like their nervous system is handling it, but there's a buzz, if you can imagine it, if you like to have too much coffee kind of thing, that's going on. Even Japan, they found with the earlier games that they had, with the video games, they had so many flashes of light, and they were so huge that they were getting a lot of seizures in kids, and even mini seizures. So I'm not saying that's happening anymore because the technology is better, but you see, if it could do that, you can see all the little things that it could do. So it's the more we can hold down that type of overexposure to stimulation, the better it would be just plain physically on their nervous system. And the other thing is, we're not just a head walking around.
Mm-hmm.
We have an IQ and an EQ. EQ is emotional quotient, IQ is intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what happens is, when they're spending a lot of time on television or the computers, they're not getting the higher level thinking skills, which you have to have with whole body movement, with running, or playing on the bicycle, or just even have in the garage some pieces of wood and nails and a hammer. But that's higher level thinking skills. They're learning problem solving skills that they don't get. They get a lot of frustration with video games. And the television is way too much stimulating for them, other than just some really nice programs or videos.
Yeah. And I think, folks, what we're saying today is there's so much you can do. Parents are sometimes struggling with their learners, with issues within their own children, but there is so much you can do, so much you can apply, and you can do it. You don't have to be a professional to do this at home. You can be a parent who loves his or her children, and you can see tremendous, tremendous growth emotionally, physically, spiritually in your children as you put that time into them and apply solid wisdom to the raising of your children. I hope you've been benefited with the things that Diane has said today. And again, Diane will be in Florida in May, Virginia in June, and back in Colorado at the CHECK Conference here later in June. Folks, check out her schedule at DianeCraft.org. That's Diane with two N's, DianeCraft.org on the web. Diane, thanks again so much for your wisdom today. We appreciate your input. You have so much experience and so many good things to share. Thank you.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
And ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Generations Radio broadcast as we bring in a message of truth and relationships to a lost and lonely world, encouraging families to disciple their own children emotionally, physically, mentally, intellectually, and spiritually for life and eternity. That's the way I define education on this radio broadcast. And I hope that you as a parent understand your obligations before God to do these things. But at the same time, you've got a lot of tools. You've got a lot of ways in which you can apply solid wisdom in raising your children for God, for life, and for eternity. You can interact with this radio program by emailing me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. You can also hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.